Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, braving icy waters for a life-saving cause. The Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge returns on New Year's Day, and we'll talk with a local rescue dive captain about how your support helps save lives. As the nation marks 250 years since the American Revolution, New York's role is back in the spotlight. From Saratoga to stories you may have never heard, we'll explore how that history is being remembered. A new year, a century-old space, and live music. The duo Joelle and River ring in 2026 at Roxbury Abbey. Cultural reporter Valerie Manzi has the story. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. That's all coming up after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump will host Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago today. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports Trump is trying to push forward his peace plan for Gaza, but Israel says it's not yet time to move to the next phase.
Under the first part of the deal, Hamas was supposed to return all of the hostages taken in the October 7th attack. Israel says the U.S. shouldn't move forward until the remains of one final hostage are returned and Hamas agrees to give up power and weapons. But Trump will want to show progress in his peace plan, says Israeli analyst Eyal Hulata.
I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the meeting in Mar-a-Lago, President Trump will declare that there is an agreement on the Board of Peace starting to take action and the things are moving ahead.
Trump is planning to chair the board. He's also trying to get an international force into Gaza. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Jerusalem.
2025 has been a rough year for local organizations that serve low-income communities. One of the largest networks, Community Action Agencies, helps about 15 million people navigate everything from housing to utility bills. But as NPR's Jennifer Ledden reports, ongoing funding cuts and policy changes have left many groups scrambling.
We're talking about 1,000 local anti-poverty groups that date back to the 1960s, and they sign people up for, you know, housing, healthcare, food, heating aid, on and on, you name it. I visited one called HapCap. It's in southeastern Appalachian, Ohio. And executive director Kelly Hattis told me for her the chaos started in January. She called it the worst day in her career. It was when President Trump ordered a freeze on all spending.
That's NPR's Jennifer Ludden reporting. Stocks opened lower to start the holiday shortened week on Wall Street. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 160 points in early trading.
2025 has been a good year for the stock market. With just 3 trading days left this year, all the major indexes are up by double digits. Crude oil prices rose more than a dollar a barrel, but a barrel of West Texas oil is still selling for less than $60, and gasoline prices continue to fall. AAA says the average price of regular gas nationwide is now $2.83 a gallon. December's gas prices were the lowest since 2020, during the pandemic. The founder of Lululemon has launched a hostile effort to reshape the company's board of directors. Founder Chip Wilson is still one of the company's biggest shareholders. The value of those shares has fallen sharply this year, and Lululemon is on the lookout for a new CEO. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks continue to trade lower on Wall Street. The Dow was down 165 points. This is NPR News in Washington. Heating costs are expected to rise 3 times faster than inflation this winter. That's according to an outlook published this month by the state directors of a program to help low-energy households heat their homes. NPR's Camila Domonoski reports rising costs for electricity and natural gas are the root causes.
The National Energy Assistance Directors Association expects that, on average, families using propane or heating oil will see no change or even small savings compared to last year. But total winter heating costs will be up around $50 for those with natural gas heating and more than $130 on average for families that use electricity. The Energy Information Administration, meanwhile, has also adjusted its winter outlook to anticipate a colder winter and higher spending than previously predicted. Camila Domonoski, NPR News.
A powerful winter storm is sweeping across the Northeast, bringing snow, ice, rain, and strong winds. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orevec says some states could see more than a foot of snow.
So heavy snows are also likely during the day on Monday from northeastern Ohio, northwestern Pennsylvania, western New York State, and also northwestern New York State. All these areas are downwind of the Great Lakes.
Wind chills are plunging in North Dakota and Minnesota, while the South faces severe thunderstorms and a sudden drop in temperatures. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 171 points, the NASDAQ down 146, the S&P 500 also trading lower, down 26. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia. For 35 years, sharing what works in schools today and working to inspire new ways to learn tomorrow. More at edutopia.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Well, before we ring in 2026, let's ring out 2025 with the economic news, with local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, last local economic report from you of the year 2025, you've got some data on the holiday season spending. How much did Americans spend this holiday season?
It was a good one. Consumers spent 3.9% more from November 1st to December 21st this year compared with last year. They're not adjusted for inflation, so it's not as big a jump as it sounds, but it's still significant. It also showed that shoppers looked for value, comparing prices a great deal, buying things often as a discount. We had more than 200 million people shopping on Thanksgiving weekend, a little more than last time. Black Friday retail sales in the United States grew 4.1% this year. The best areas were jewelry and apparel. Clothing did very well. Holiday spending on apparel went up almost 8%. Helped maybe by cold weather in certain places. So it looked good overall.
Yeah. It still seems, though, that the economy is a little tricky. There's no recession or anything, but are financial problems sort of mounting?
Yes. We're seeing that the data is mixed, but negative in some ways. We have unemployment and wage growth is slowing, inflation remains high, quite a few concerns going on about that. One thing is that the construction of data centers for AI had a great effect, accounted for maybe half of the GDP's increase this past year. In fact, one economist said if it weren't for the AI spending boom, we'd be in a different place. And there's not really a sense that the tide is really coming in and lifting all boats. It seems to be limited to some people where a lot of sets of people, especially lower income ones, are not doing very well relatively, especially also recent college graduates who are having the hardest time finding jobs, really, since the Great Recession over a decade ago ended. It's especially a problem there. It's just not doing as well. There's some optimism here and there, but there are real concerns, and it doesn't seem to be an even thing where everyone is benefiting from the good things that are happening.
And we're getting data slowly because of the shutdown. It delayed data. So you do have some third quarter data for the U.S. economy. It was a strong quarter, but it still remains split. I guess that's reflected in what you're saying.
Yes. Well, we have a 4.3% annual rate for economic growth in the third quarter. That is very good. But as they're saying, most of the strength is coming from wealthier households. The tariffs, though, have not had an what was called a giant depressive effect that many economists had once feared. We have lower income families, though, are dealing with slowing wage costs, slowing wage growth, and rising costs of beef, coffee, and furniture, and some other household goods. So it did well, but again, sets of different people are accounting for different results.
And given that we have these delays in economic data, what are the theories that people say is happening with our economic data?
Well, you have a piece here in the New York Times that purported three, trying to reconcile the economy expanding rate I just told you about, and the 4.6 unemployment, which is getting higher and higher. The three real explanations to make it easy are: you can trust the jobs numbers more than you can the economy numbers, which means we are relatively bad off. The other side is that the GDP thing is right and the labor market data is misleading. Eventually it'll be revised upwards, so that's saying we're doing better than we thought. And the third one is that both are correct. It's just productivity is getting higher, so fewer people are needed to work in general, but the economy is still growing a great deal. I would say there's a fourth one, and I would call it a bifurcation, and that's that people in the upper third or so of income are doing very well, spending a lot, supporting the Christmas numbers I just mentioned, and saying good things about the economy, and people are in the bottom of two-thirds of income are really almost in a recession. They're not doing well with jobs, and their things they are buying are costing more and more. The tariffs are affecting them more. So we really have a split into two sets of people right now, and it means that we can get some numbers that are quite deceptive one way or another, because they're talking, some numbers are driven, the percentage numbers and such are driven by the lower two-thirds, and the total spending and such are driven by the top one-third. So that's my explanation for why these numbers can vary. I mean, we have people with a growing gap in expectations, and some people are doing a lot better than others.
What are our small business owners forecasting for 2026? We've got a lot of them in our listening area. What are small business owners thinking for the new year?
Overall, the phrase is cautiously optimistic, but it sounds even better. About 80% are confident in that outlook, and 79% expect revenue growth, expect to sell more next year than they did this year. We have a lot of small businesses more and more are moving into AI and other things to step up efficiency and manage costs. So inflation and rising costs remain the top concern among business owners, but concerns about labor availability and wide economic uncertainty, and people are tired of making decisions. They're calling it decision fatigue, and all of those things are weighing on confidence. We also had a very unstable year with these tariffs. If they were to stay the same for a year or so, then they'd be able to deal with them a lot better, instead of here they are, then the next day and then they're gone, after you've spent a lot of time and maybe money planning what you're going to do with them. So if that kind of thing stabilizes, then small business owners will like it more.
What are some financial resolutions that Americans are making for the new year?
Well, the financial situation is a big problem right now for a lot of people. have some remarkable statistics here from this article from Fox Business, and 55% feel overwhelmed by personal finances. We also have 72% this past year experienced some kind of financial setback, and then we have a lot of people are trying to settle something. We have only 23% say they want to stick to a spending budget. That kind of thing can do a lot of work when figuring out what to spend, how much you have to spend, and so on. But overall, yes, there will be a lot of people making some decisions like right around now for what they're going to be doing financially next year.
One of the things we lost in 2025, the penny. What can you do with pennies now?
Well, they're not gone yet. There are still 300 billion of them in existence right now, though, I mean, probably a majority of them, even the number like that, are sitting in jars in people's houses and cars and things. And it's really a long way toward them not being accepted. There's really no chance that they won't be accepted next year or even the year after. You can still certainly use them, and often the places will appreciate seeing them because they can give them out in change when there are already reduced amounts available to businesses for banks, and they're making do somehow. And yes, the one thing, if you don't want it, it's a really good idea, and I would be in a way, it would be a patriotic thing for you to get rid of the pennies you have that are sitting around doing nothing. There's really no chance that the great majority, the massive majority, 99.9%, well, not that many, the wheat cents from before 1959 are 3 or 4 cents apiece now, really. But otherwise, the chance of having a lot of money, and if you're not inclined to go through and look at them and pick out those and take them to a coin shop or something, then what you can do, it's really, it would be a patriotic thing if you were to cash them in some form. You can use the Coinstar and such machines at stores. I know they say on the front of them that they get something like an 8% commission. They will give you 8% less than the cash value, but most of them will give you a coupon or a gift card, in effect, for a major retailer. The last time I used one, I saw that I could get the full value in Amazon if I took it in an Amazon credit, and I use Amazon regularly anyway, so it wasn't any hardship, so I did that. So you might be surprised, not only pennies but other change, how much they add up to. So if you do that and you find you take a coupon for someone like Amazon or some retailer that you're using, and often they will have one, it won't cost you anything. You'll get the full value without the nuisance of going through them and all that. So consider that. Some things are working out. There are lawsuits pending about whether businesses will ever be allowed to round things against the customer. So for those who don't want to round in favor of the customer every time, it's also not going to be the same as for credit cards when there's no need to do anything strange with the pennies, just do the entire amount. So that it will work out, but it will take a while, and it'll be a long time until there are no pennies out there that people want to spend.
All right. Long live the penny. Let's talk about how the pennies and numbers changed this morning, and how did things change over the last 52 weeks? Let's take a look back and see where things are.
That's what I have. Instead of one-week comparisons, I'm giving you 52-week comparisons. On December 30th, I was on the air on this program, and this is what I am giving you by means of seeing how we did. Gold, early this morning, was $44.72. That's up $1,858 or 71% over the year to make it the second best of the assets I've been reading about. Silver got number one, 75.80, and that dropped $4 over the last few days. It was 79 or something. It finished on Friday, and there was some immediate profit taking. Well, that went up 46.42, or 158%, to take the prize for the best of these investments. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 48,727, up 57.35, or 13%. That's the fourth or fifth best. NASDAQ, 23,593, up 3,871 for 20%, and the number three investment results. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 57.92, was down 12.67. That's a good thing for oil to go down for most of us. So that's down 18%. So that really contributed, I think, to how good the economy and everything else was this year. Bitcoin, 87,884, meant a loss on the 52 weeks of 58.56, or 6%. It was the only one of these assets I'm reading that went down over the course of the year. British pound, 1.3489, up just over 9 cents, or 7%. On the year for the sixth best. Euro, 1.774, or up 13.6 cents, a 13% increase, tying with the Dow for fourth or fifth best. And even the humble Japanese 100 yen coin, 64 cents, up a penny for about 2% for the seventh best. So overall, it's been... We had another big week, incidentally. Things went up consistently from a week ago, but we didn't need that, really, to make it such a strong and unusually strong year and a broad-based year for investment performance.
All right. Well, we will see you in the new year and get more. We'll start all over again. And thanks for looking back over the last 52 weeks. And thanks for being here every Monday to help us out. Local economic perspective from our local economist and author, James B. Huntington. Here's to a healthy, happy and abundant new year to you, sir.
Thank you, Tim. And thank you, listeners.
Okay, I'll take a break, and when we come back, this year marks 250 years since the American Revolution, and New York played a pivotal role from the Battle of Saratoga to historic sites across the state. We'll take a closer look. That's coming up next. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
I'm Laura Flanders. Join me Monday evenings at 7 on Radio Catskill for Laura Flanders and Friends. It's the show where the people who say it can't be done take a backseat to the people who are doing it. Then stay with us for three more Powerhouse Talk programs back-to-back. Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk at 7:30, The Janice Adams Show at 8, and La Voz en Breve with Mariel Fiore at 9. Monday evenings, starting at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio. How has George Friedrich Handel's Messiah remained a hit for nearly 300 years?
It felt like it was a piece of art that could do something in the world. Not comfort you, actually, but buck you up.
But whose Messiah is it, anyways?
There's a sense of pride, of ownership. This is ours.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This year marks the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. New York has a deeply celebrated place in the history of the American Revolution, with the historic Battle of Saratoga in 1777 and a slew of historic sites from the war across the state. Chantel Destra of the New York Public News Network has the story of how New York is upholding the legacy of the Revolutionary War, from exhibits at the State Museum to telling the stories of everyday people who were vital to America's victory.
The year 2025 marks a historic year for the United States of America, with the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. The Revolutionary War, which served as the catalyst for modern America's fight for independence from Great Britain, lasted about 8 years, from 1775 to 1783. Maeve Kane, an associate history professor at SUNY Albany, says the significance of the history and legacy of the Revolutionary War cannot be overstated.
The American Revolution is probably one of the most radically significant events in human history. The idea that all people should have a say in their government, that all people should participate in the government, and the American Revolution puts that into action as the first step towards that. So with the Declaration of Independence in 1776 through to the writing of the Constitution in the 1780s, the American Revolution is really about who has the right to govern themselves, and how do people claim that and make space for themselves in the government.
SUNY Albany Associate History Professor and Cultural Historian Christopher Pastore says the 250th anniversary is important because it reminds the country and the world about the journey of the United States becoming independent.
This is a celebration of a people who came together in search of creating a democratic republic. Now, at the time of the American Revolution, they were fighting, at least initially, to restore what they imagined as their British liberties. But over time, it became apparent that independence was necessary. And with that, they sought to create something new.
Many modern-day historians assert that one of the reasons that the Revolutionary War is often regarded as groundbreaking is because of the nature of the war. The war turned brother against brother and neighbor against neighbor, all based on ideology. Americans were met with a choice between fighting for independence or being British patriot loyalists. Christopher Brown, a British Empire historian and professor with Columbia University, underscores that significance.
I think people need to understand that the American Revolution was a real war, with, over the course of 8 years, which is a long time, more than 100,000 dead on both sides, British, patriot, loyalist, Native American. Sometimes the ideals and the values that come out are legacies of the revolution. We forget just how bloody it was. And it was really neighbor versus neighbor. In some ways, it was even more of a civil war than the Civil War, because you had communities fighting with each other, not just a kind of sectional division between North and South.
And Professor Pastore underscored the sentiment that the Revolutionary War was more than a war between the colonies and the British Empire. It also has deep history involving New York State.
The American Revolution wasn't just a war between the colonies and Britain itself. It was a partisan war of neighbor versus neighbor. And we see this in sharp relief in New York. Where patriots and Tories were fighting one another, up and down the Hudson River Valley and across New York in quite often quite violent ways.
In New York, the state's role in the Revolutionary War is one that is not just acknowledged, but also celebrated. Historians see New York as playing a central role in the war. One example of the state's role is the infamous Battle of Saratoga in 1777. Historians also point to the Sullivan-Clinton expedition as another New York pivotal moment in the war.
New York is the key to the continent. The British knew that if they lost the geography of New York, they would lose the war. So that's why you see some of the major campaigns fought here: the New York campaign in 1776, the battles of Saratoga in 77, and the Sullivan-Clinton campaign of the Continental Army against the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois in 1779. Like, New York is the revolution.
New Yorkers understand that New York played a pivotal role in the American Revolution. If we think about a major turning point in the war for independence, we could say that Saratoga, again, in 1777, was this, again, a pivotal point in the war that showed that Americans could beat British troops, and that the war could be won by Americans. And as a result, this brought France, France's involvement. And so without French help, it's doubtful that Americans could have succeeded in the way that they did.
To commemorate the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution, the New York State Museum will be debuting a Revolutionary New York exhibit. Aaron Noble, who serves as a senior historian and curator with the New York State Museum, unpacks the exhibit.
So we're incredibly excited that we're finally seeing the process come to life and to be able to present this work to the New York visitors. The exhibit will focus on New York as its pivotal central theater of the American Revolution, the fact that the turning point of the American Revolution happened just north of Albany at Saratoga in 1777, and then New York's revolutionary story really covers the entirety of the conflict from 1775 to the evacuation of New York City in 1783. No other state can really cover every aspect of the war through its history, the way that New York can.
The exhibit will feature the Revolutionary War gunboat, and it will also bring museum visitors through the history from the Revolutionary War to present day. Another exhibit is the George Washington and American Paradox exhibit. General Washington is known as the great American leader of the American Revolution, but Washington was also a complex individual. The exhibit offers a complete history to the life of Washington, as well as his contributions to the war. Professor Brown says the 250th anniversary of the Revolutionary War is an opportunity to continue researching and diving into the different stories that make up the war.
I do think that there can be a little bit of a sense with the American Revolution that we already know what that is. We already know what that's about. And I think as folks begin to scratch the surface, and dig into both local resources and national resources, they will discover all kinds of stories and perspectives and vantage points and insights that are unfamiliar and hopefully will inspire curiosity to learn more and to build on that revolutionary heritage.
Many historians say it's also important to highlight the different demographic groups that were pivotal to the war and highlight the figures beyond the founding fathers. Associate History Professor Carl Bontempo underscored the importance of telling the stories of everyday people that fought in the war.
Maybe one of the larger gaps in how we think this stuff through is that, you know, there's a sort of focus. I'll call it a focus on the founders, right? And so this idea that the founding generation, right, is what we should think about when we think about the American Revolution. But also, you know, a lot of scholarship and what historians research and think about is about maybe other people who contributed to the revolution. Sort of everyday folks, right? And thinking about the ways in which, you know, just American women and enslaved African Americans, free Blacks, also Native Americans, all played a role in that revolutionary moment, right? And I think sometimes I wish that that part of the story was more part of the public's discussion. Because I think what happens then is that we end up sort of lionizing the founding generation. And you turn them almost into the statues that we see of them. And statues are hard to relate to.
And with the rich history of the American Revolution, historians can agree that so much can be gained from unpacking the impact and legacy of the war in present day. They assert that it's important for historians to continue looking at that history in the years to come.
There's so many lessons to be taken from the era of the war. And, you know, America has always been an experiment and also an aspiration. And so in that sense, the American Revolution is really never ending.
And thanks to Senator Chantal Destra and the New York Public News Network for that report. We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's a New Year's tradition, an icy plunge for a life-saving mission. Details on the Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge coming up next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
The need is growing. More families in our community are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are on the front lines, but they need help. You can make a difference by donating non-perishable food, personal care items, and baby supplies, or by volunteering to support and distribute these donations. It's about nourishing our neighbors. Visit WJFFradio.org for info to help ensure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's a New Year's tradition that combines icy courage with community support. The annual Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge returns on New Year's Day, raising funds for the Ledgedale and Tafton Volunteer Fire Company's rescue dive teams. The event brings together brave plungers, local supporters, and first responders who rely on these donations to stay trained and equipped for water rescues on the lake. Joining us live this morning, Joe Slijinski, dive captain with the Ledgedale Volunteer Fire Company. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for inviting us.
And let's remind folks who may not be familiar, what's the Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge? Why is it held each year?
Well, Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge is one of our major fundraisers for both the dive teams, for both Ledgedale and Tafton. As you know, we're a total volunteer organization, so making the funds to be able to support it is... wears the same hats as the divers, you know. When we're not training, we're out there fundraising, you know. Fundraising is probably half of the effort of the whole deal for it, you know. So it makes it tough. So anytime we get anything like this and we get publicity like you're giving us, it really does help tremendously.
Well, and you know, Lake Wallenpaupack, a huge reservoir in northeast Pennsylvania, second largest lake contained entirely in Pennsylvania, known for recreational activities. You don't think, I guess, too much about emergencies, but you guys have to. That's what you do. What kind of emergencies do your teams respond to on Lake Wallenpaupack?
Actually, from A to Z, from simply as somebody dropping their keys in the water to somebody overboard on a boat, which unfortunately happens way too often. I mean, pardon me. As you know, the lake is big. It covers a massive area. You know, it's 5,700 acres, and it's like 12 miles long. You know, 2 miles wide at the widest point. So when we get a call come in, you know, it's like. We have to determine where on the lake it is because there's so many different accesses, you know. So it's like we try to educate, you know, our boaters and you know, the community on if an actually emergency happens, what to do to help us, you know. And one of the main things is, you know, if something happens out in the middle of the lake, please drop your anchor right where it's at because you'll never get us back on the spot, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the hardest part, determining, you know, where an incident has occurred. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's from life-saving to, unfortunately, recovering for a family, you know?
Are folks still going out on the lake this time of year? Are there restrictions around times that you can go, or...?
There is really no restrictions. There is a PFD restriction after, I believe it's October 15th. You're supposed to have the PFD on and all. But, I mean, unfortunately, we've had calls in the middle of the winter, later in the winter, early spring, you know, where people should have them on and they don't. And unfortunately, it turns into recovery. Mm. I mean, when you fall in the water now, you know, you lose your warmth 25 times quicker than you do in air, you know, so hypothermia sets in real quick. So your strength just depletes so quickly.
And you mentioned that you guys are all volunteers. What made it motivate you to do this work, especially in some challenging conditions like cold water rescues?
Well, I know that's a question that's probably only answered by every individual. I mean, I've always said it's in your blood, but you know what? We have grown over the years. You know, I've been doing this in our volunteer fire company for nearly 40 years, you know, so it's been family generational. So trying to get the newer people in, which is finally absolutely happening, you know, but it took a lot and it takes a lot and get people in. And once they get a taste of it and to see the thank you get from your community for someone that is down and out that couldn't possibly do what you're doing, you know, that's the biggest payday you could possibly ever have.
What are some of the things that donations like this event help pay for? Gear, training, safety equipment, all that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, training, safety equipment, just to outfit one diver from stem to stern. You know, you're in about $10,000. You know, and we take that burden on ourselves. You know, and without the support of our local community, you know, that just couldn't happen. But have outstanding support. Have outstanding members, you know, to help get the support. And just like people like yourselves that help reach out to the general public, because a lot of people really don't understand what they have there until it's needed, you know. Right. And then they're, you know, it's just like getting some kind of diagnosis. Everybody goes online, what's going on, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's just like that. Then they start diving a little bit deeper, no pun intended, but and to find out exactly what everything is about.
I mean, I think you sometimes take it for granted. Like you said, I'll drive by the area and realize, oh, the lake is there. I'm maybe driving by, but not thinking about all the volunteers that it takes to make sure people are safe as they're out on the lake. The annual Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge is January 1st from 11 to 1 at the First Class Marina. Now, not everybody wants to jump in the water, but how else can they support?
They absolutely could come on down and help support. We're going to have live music. We have big campfires. The Grill Father for food will be there. They could have their lunches there. They can cheer on people going in. I mean, it's a great festivity. There's plenty of parking. We usually have like 400 to 700 people show up there. So it's a pretty good event. It's growing every year. And it's from 11 to 1. And then, usually hangs on a little bit after that, but people really enjoy themselves. It's a family outing, and you should see the great outfits that come out every year. People try to outdo each other, and you get groups coming, which is awesome. And this is what it's all about. It's like, okay, I'm washing away everything that happened last year, starting with fresh, and this is the best baptism of water you're going to get. It's as cold as you're going to ever have.
literally. And it looks like it's going to be pretty cold on Thursday. I think the high is like 18 or something.
That makes it better.
even more fun, even more more polar. Yep. It really sounds like a community celebration that's happening.
It really is. And you know, it's the show that, you know, companies work together, you know, us and Taft, and we work together hand in hand, you know. Anything happens on the lake or surrounding lakes. I mean, Lake Wallenpaupack's not the only lake we cover. We cover a ton of area. We go all the way 82 miles away of North Wayne County, you know, and unfortunately we're the primary team for all the way up there. So it takes time. Mm-hmm. That's why it's like trying to get education out to people, you know, to make that call. And from our inception, 93, 94, things have changed so much with technology, you know, that we are now notified. I mean, back then there was no cell phone. So, you know, you had an incident happen. Somebody had to get to a phone. Now, you were losing 20 minutes or so. Now it's immediate. So we have what's called a golden hour to respond to. If someone goes under, you know, you have up to a golden hour to get them out and try to resuscitate, you know. A lot of people don't understand that, but when that water is below 70 degrees, you still have a chance of resuscitation up to an hour. Yeah.
And can folks still register to participate if they want to?
Absolutely. They can register at pawpackplunge.com. That's PAUPACKPOLARPLUNGE.com. And if they're not computer savvy, they can show up there and they can actually register there. And they can register, and they're going to get a complimentary T-shirt when they register. And even if they want to register and not go in, that's fine. We won't tell anybody. All right?
If folks don't want to take the plunge, can they? Do they still need to register in advance to do that, or can they just show up and donate there?
No. They can show up right there. They do not have to register in advance.
Yeah. And you've got food and activities on site as well?
Absolutely, yeah. We have a big campfire. We have a music DJ, Jim Hamill from Pocono Mountain Visitors Bureau. He's done an awesome job for us. Yeah. It's like we have the Grill Father, which is coming down with the grill. Everybody knows about the Grill Father around this area, you know. And the biggest thank is out to Tom Mueller from First Class. I mean, without him, he goes way above and beyond to make this happen. He gives us his sight to use. I mean, inside, outside, everything. He's really super, absolutely yeah. Wonderful.
And before we go, any special outfits or presentation that the Ledgedale Volunteer Fire Company is doing for the plunge this year?
Any special outfits?
Yeah, anything you guys are planning?
No, we just plan for it to be safe. And everybody that comes is going to be able to leave. That is the goal.
You guys aren't doing that part. You're doing the safe part. Everybody else can dress up.
That's right.
All right.
That's right. Yeah. No, well, I mean, it's totally safe. We have all of our divers surrounding the area that they're going in. It's absolutely safe. And I really encourage people to come down, and you might need to bring some earplugs because there is some high screeches when they hit that water sometimes.
Like I said, it's going to be like 18 that day, so they're going to be even higher this year maybe. That's Joe Slajinski, dive captain with the Ledgedale Volunteer Fire Company. He is participating with the Tafton Volunteer Fire Company and their rescue dive team in the annual Lake Wallenpaupack Polar Plunge. It's on New Year's Day. It starts at 11. It's at First Class Marina in Tafton. There's more information at pawpackpolarplunge.com. Joe, thank you so much for what you do and all the volunteers out there to keep the lake safe. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it. You have a great day now.
You too. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we've got a New Year's Day event that's not in the water. It's actually at the Roxbury Abbey, an annual tradition celebrating the Abbey's 100th anniversary. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi has more next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Psychologist Dacher Keltner once had a student stand under a grove of giant eucalyptus trees.
In 1 to 2 minutes, our students reported feeling less narcissistic, less entitled. You just share more when you're feeling awe. You cooperate more.
The power of everyday awe. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Local independent journalism depends on the support of people like you. Your donation now at the end of the year ensures that we can continue offering accurate, fact-based reporting while creating stories that bring the community together. Your donation helps amplify public voices and supports our efforts to confront hate, bigotry, and misinformation. Be part of our good work. Make your year-end donation now at wjffradio.org.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A free New Year's Day concert returns to historic Roxbury Abbey, and this year it comes with a milestone. Celebrating the Abbey's 100-year anniversary, Liberal Arts Roxbury presents a community-wide music gathering featuring the lively duo Joel and River. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi sat down with Kevin Moore, founder of Liberal Arts Roxbury, to talk about the performers, the century-old space, and the tradition of bringing accessible art and music to the community to ring in the new year.
There is a wonderful event coming up.
in Roxbury, New York, on New Year's Day, quite a celebration. And Kevin Moore, founder of Liberal Arts Roxbury, is here to tell us all about it. And he'll give us a little background about Liberal Arts Roxbury as well. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start first with the New Year's Day concert. That's next Thursday, January 1st at 4 p.m. at Roxbury Abbey in Roxbury, New York. And we're going to be hearing from Joelle and River. They're a Catskill-based duo that have a very theatrical flair for music.
Yes, Joelle and River met in New York City. River's from New Orleans originally, and Joelle's from Harlem. And they're a married couple. And I would say their music is a real, it's very original. It's a real blend of different things, classical, reflecting their training, but also hip-hop, Caribbean, Latin traditions. They're quite, sometimes it sounds to me, a little bit like Billie Holiday or Madeleine Peru, if you're familiar with her work, a kind of progressive jazz, very contemporary, though.
They look like a very lively duo from what I could see online.
Yes. No, sometimes they apply face makeup. They have a lot of dance moves. They're very compelling on stage.
And this event is a New Year's Day celebration, and it's the eighth that Roxbury Liberal Arts has sponsored, correct?
That's right. We did miss 1 year, but, you know, we started it in 2019, January 1st, and we had just gotten this gallery space in Roxbury. We bought a building and we thought, well, let's put on some shows. And we had this beautiful space. And we thought, you know, New Year's Day is kind of a depressing day in some ways. The holidays are over. And we thought we might, and we had musician friends visiting. So we thought, well, let's just offer a concert to the town. And it can be a kind of welcoming the new year, you know, positive look forward kind of celebration. And so the first year it was a friend of ours, Nilko Andreas, who's a classical guitarist from Colombia, from Bogota, Colombia. And without really intending to, we've done this every year, and we've had a kind of world music program. The second year was someone we met in the New York subway performing, busking in the New York subway, Ankit Shrestha from Nepal, and a friend of his, Diwas Gurung, who also lives in upstate New York. But over the years, you know, we've had a number of different people from different parts of the world playing different kinds of music. Michaela Bennett is a classical performer from Canada originally. David Wong, a bass player from New York City. Liz Chidester from the mountains of Virginia. Ernesto Villalobos, part of a Mexican trio called the Villalobos Brothers. They're all from Mexico City. So we've had quite a diverse group of people over the years, and I think we're always very excited to offer that to our community here. Who, you know, not, there are a number of great local performers, of course, but we like to import somebody who maybe is a little exotic and sort of out of the usual for this community.
Well, it's a wonderful way to greet in the new year, I must say. Can you tell us a little bit about Liberal Arts Roxbury and its history?
Yes. I live in Roxbury, New York, kind of half the time in New York City. I'm a museum curator. And, you know, Liberal Arts started because we bought a building on Main Street. It was a kind of a prominent building. The old general store had been sitting empty for some years, and it was kind of depressing. And so we just got the idea that let's buy the building and do just what we know how to do, which is have art exhibitions and receptions and maybe some film screenings and book talks and music. And it led to even more kinds of community events like Healing Sound Journey and yoga sessions and dance parties. And it turned into quite a lively community center. And you know, just knowing artists and knowing many creative people, they just kind of came out of the woodwork. You know, this part of the Catskills, as you well know, is sometimes, you know, more, less populated little more isolated than, say, Hudson Valley. And I think that until I bought this building and started having these events, I didn't realize there were so many interesting creative people around. But, you know, you really have to kind of draw them out. So that's what we've done for all these years. Unfortunately, a couple of years ago, we leased the space, the gallery space, to a grocery store, which is something the town desperately needed. But we continue to do events such as this New Year's Day concert, which we're doing in our friend's church, the Brian Toll Studio, also known as Roxbury Abbey. So we're collaborating with them. We've done this before. We hosted an art exhibition in their space one time before, too. But the concert, I think, will be beautiful because the space is very beautiful and the acoustics are wonderful.
Yes, I've covered a couple of other events at the Abbey for WJFF Radio Catskill over the last couple of years. The building, you say the building now has a grocery store again?
Yes, in some ways, the original space was a general store. The building was built in 1840, and so now the Good Grocer is installed within the old gallery space. However, we are working on, with a state grant, we're working on a renovation of another space in back of the building, which we hope to open sometime next year. Possibly next year's New Year's Day concert will be in the new renovated space.
If I remember correctly, that's a pretty large space.
Yes. The gallery space, now the grocery store, is quite big. It basically had like three gallery spaces in it. So the exhibitions we did there were quite serious, you know, for a small town gallery. And artists, you know, who show in galleries in New York City or Los Angeles, they were happy to have the space. It's so beautiful, and to be able to do essentially whatever they wanted. But now it is a sizable grocery store, which is a great gift to the town, I think. But the new space that we're renovating is a space hidden in back that is kind of raw space, a garage downstairs and a storage space upstairs, and it will make a very nice gallery and event space.
Wow. Well, it sounds wonderful. I remember visiting the gallery some years ago. Don't ask me when, but we used to take rides up to Roxbury and poke around, and probably attended a couple of events at the Roxbury Arts Group.
Across the street.
Across the street, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to share this with us and putting the time in to make it happen on New Year's Day. What a lovely gift to the community.
Yeah, I think it's always a very lovely event, and so many people come out. I think we had over 100 people the last time we did it. So please come. You know, check our website, liberalartsroxbury.com, if you want more information or directions. But yeah, please come.
Okay, well, thank you again, Kevin, and Happy New Year.
Thanks, and Happy New Year.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi, speaking with Kevin Moore, founder of Liberal Arts Roxbury. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
It's world-class jazz from around the world. It's time to ring in the new year with singer Nicole Zoraitis in Las Vegas.
I got my mojo working, buddy. Just won't work on you.
Drummer Casa Overall in New York. And singer Sophia Ray on an island in Croatia on Toast of the Nation, our annual holiday tradition. Join us.
Starting at 9 on New Year's Eve on Radio Catskill.
My name is Ralph Diaz, and I am a volunteer here at Radio Catskill. I come here every Tuesday from 4 to 6, and I host the All Things Considered. And I also want to thank everyone for listening at this great radio station. From all of us here at Radio Catskill, Thank you for listening. Have a safe and festive holiday season and a happy new year.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, still breezy and some snow showers still lingering. This afternoon, little accumulation of snow, rain, though. High getting up to 45. Then temperatures dropping down to 17. Possibility of a snow shower tonight. That cold will continue throughout the week. High tomorrow, 21. Windy morning snow showers. There is a wind advisory in effect now through 7 tomorrow. And again, going to be pretty cold all week long. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. Radio Catskill. On Point is coming up next. It's 11 o'clock.